Thanks for downloading my podcast called From the Internet. It's people I chat to who I've got to know from the internet. And one of those guys is Brownie, Paul Brownie Brown. He's an absolute cracking bloke. We've chatted on the phone and via Twitter for years and years. And we've only ever met and had beers just once before. And we gave it a pretty good crack. Now, I love him. He's really great on the radio. I'm a big fan of his work. He's great at sparking debate and starting the conversation. And he's truly loved or hated by his listeners, which is exactly where you want to be. Now, he's just finished up at Hot FM Queensland and will be shortly starting his next radio chapter. And online, man, this guy knows how to turn nothing into something. Many, many times, he's created a worldwide trending hashtag on Twitter. He's been the lead story on news.com.au a couple of times, and he's recently begun running Wall of Sound, a website for his musical passion, which is metal. Yeah, I know what you're thinking. How on earth did this guy leave Hot FM? This is Brownie. Thanks for listening to From the Internet. I start by asking him, hey, Brownie, so what do you do for a craft?
Well, it's hard to say at the moment because I'm a professional shit talker.
Yep.
Which is also known as a radio announcer, but I'm also a band interviewer, a tattoo lover, a facial hair grower, you know, this, that and everything.
We work for the same company, Southern Cross Austereo, and we've met each other once in person, but I feel like we've been friends for a long time and chatted heaps.
That's the thing, yeah. With the help of social media these days, you know, you talk to people, you meet them, you hear them down the grapevine. You have these great relationships with them online, and then when it comes to finally meet them, they burst into your hotel room at the Radio Awards while you're half naked bringing beers.
Well, I actually wrote down a question. I was like, maybe I'll tell the story of how we met in real life for the first time, but you kind of beat me to it. Maybe
we could do that.
Oh, we'll tell that later.
Elaborate a little bit more and say I was naked. Either way, it's fine.
I feel like just from what you've said, just creates enough suspense for people to want to hear the end of that story. But that's true. That's how we did meet in person for the first
time. Yeah, and it's been a great friendship ever since.
Yeah. How many of your friends and, I guess, like fans of your radio stuff, despite never actually hearing you on the radio because they haven't lived where you've been broadcasting, like how many people do you reckon you know and know you just from online?
On my Facebook account, I've got about 900 or so friends. But the thing is, on my personal account, it's all people who I know in some way, shape or form.
Yeah.
But with that said, there's a few stragglers here and there, people who I've met on Twitter or whatever who, you know, have similar interests, a lot of things in common, who make their way on there too. And the thing is, it's all a part of networking, really. You meet different people, they help you out with certain things that you need help with.
Yeah. Now, we obviously met in a pretty weird way when I broke into your hotel room. Have you met any other people that you've known online for a really long time and then met them in real life and, I don't know, it wasn't what you thought it would be?
Look, it's hard. Like, a couple of years ago, there was a couple of people from Twitter and, you know, what starts as like a normal conversation between two people, whether it be about a band or a TV show or something like that, it evolves into this online friendship. But then when you go to meet them in person, they're completely different to their persona online. Like, they're very quiet. This person didn't really know a lot about the band we were talking about. I just kind of think it was one of those things where they joined this conversation because a lot of other people were doing it.
Because I reckon you could seem like an expert on Twitter about a lot of things, like 140 characters. You could just look up a fact or just that one bit of knowledge you know about them and seem quite knowledgeable without actually knowing all that much at all.
That's it, exactly. I mean, with things like Google taking over the world, it's really taking away our ability to think and do research. Yes, you can jump on Google and research something, but actually knowing it deep down and how it works, it's two completely different things, in my opinion.
Have you had the opposite in that you've met someone in real life that you may know from online and you thought they were pretty shit, like they were like a shit person, or you just hate them on Twitter, and then you met them and went, oh, no, they're actually a really nice guy.
There's a few people who I can safely say like that. You know, your persona and how they are online is completely different to who they are in person. This sort of goes as well into the category of online dating too.
Well, give me an example. Name some names.
Well, I went on this date with this girl quite a few years ago. I'm against online dating. That's one thing I want to put out there. And, you know, has the pictures on there from, like, you know, 12 years ago or whatever.
Yep.
Has all these things about, you know, her achievements, what she wants to do, this, that and the other. Went out on a date with her. She looked completely different to how she looked online. Obviously, couldn't back up a lot of the stuff she had on her profile too. And it was one of those awkward nights where she'd pull her phone out and start talking on her phone to her mates or whatever. And I was kind of left to sit there and just have this really awful date.
That's and so when did, like, would you halfway through that date, would you just sort of go, no? and then leave? Or did you, like, call her out on any of those things?
Well, no. Like, I sort of gave her the benefit of the doubt and hung around on that day just because, you know, that's the kind of guy I am. I'm a nice guy.
Oh, yeah,
guy.
You're
like
an absolute gentleman. An
but
absolute
then
gentleman.
Afterwards, completely not gone. Shut off completely, no contact again, and, yeah, good luck to her.
I think, because, Brownie, I don't know if you know this, I used to play volleyball, like, for a living, like, when I was in my younger, like, early 20s and stuff. And I weighed about 71, 72 kilos and was like kind of ripped. And now I'm 20 kilos fatter. But I reckon I've still got an old volleyball pic on my Tinder profile.
Yeah, and you need to change that completely. Be honest, be up to date. I would say go maybe 6 months, if that is probably as pushing it as far as it can go. But yeah, try and have that updated as regularly as possible.
Do you need to update more than other people to just to show off the size of your beard? And how big is it right now?
I am a fan of the beard. I just recently had to trim it because I had to look a bit more professional.
For what?
But with that said, it's a good couple of inches long at the moment, but I'll grow that back as big as I can possibly get it.
Okay, I'm glad you didn't use beard in that sentence because I'm going to edit around that and take it really out of context. but when you say you have to look more professional for something, what on earth would, like, for what? Like, we don't have a professional job.
Well, no, it's all about, you know, how you look in first impressions and things like that. I'm sort of in between jobs at the moment right now, going on to something different.
Yeah.
And I don't want to rock up and have this appearance of a guy who is covered in tattoos with a really unmaintained beard that comes down to almost where his nipple line is. So I want to rock up on the first day, be looking professional, of course, and, you know, obviously be the part that I am. And then eventually once the comfortableness kicks in and, you know, people start to get to know what I'm like, that's when I'll let it grow.
I think on the first day I did breakfast radio in Toowoomba, I had like these nice jeans, these nice shoes, a t-shirt, and then a nice like collared shirt over the top. So I got a few compliments when I was wearing and I looked slick and they said, oh, this won't last. And by the end of the week, it was tracky dacks, thongs, some dirty old t-shirt. I looked rank. You don't think that's like kind of giving a false fraudulent impression?
It is. And that's the thing too. Like for my first day in radio, I think I did the exact same thing too. Long sleeve, button up shirt, you know, your type of pants that you wear with a formal suit, whatever. And then 7 years later, towards my final time or my final shift working in radio in central Queensland, I'd rock up to work wearing thongs, shorts and a singlet. Like that was my daily outfit that I wear.
And did you have to dress up when you met clients and stuff or not
That's
really?
That's the thing. A lot of people go, oh, but you're on radio. You don't have to look good. Yeah, we have to go out and represent the company and meet people here and there. So that's why I had the emergency jean shoes and shirt in the car ready to go just in case.
That's the strangest thing when people say, you're on radio and no one sees you. Like, when I worked in an accounting firm, I wasn't on TV, but there's still people in the office.
Exactly that. See, it's all this mentality of, like, how it is with the business. You, even though people don't see you, they still have an image of what they expect you to look like, and that's what bosses are like too. That's why people will always dress up to the best of their ability when they go meet a new boss. But on the weekend, you know, a couple of weeks later, bang, you're out there, you're wearing something skimpy or, you know, you're going to a club, for example, and you're wearing, you know, ripped jeans, a shirt with no singlet, sleeves on it, and, yeah, just pretty much rocking out.
Did you have, like, a desk, like, at your last job in Central Queensland?
No, we were kind of banished to our studio. We'd kind of go in there and get locked up of a morning at 4:30, and pretty much, yeah, we'd have to work all the way up until we finish inside that studio.
Oh, I personally wouldn't mind that, but we have to get out and then someone else comes into the studio and we've got like a desk and an office, and it's really strange when people say to me like, you know, you used to work in accounting and good on you, now you don't have a desk job. And it's weird that I finish my show and I sit down at my desk in an office with 50 other people and check my emails and like, I don't know, I feel still like I've got an office job still.
That's it. It's exactly the same. The only difference is you're talking to people on a wider range as opposed to sitting at a desk and, you know, figuring out which client you need to go make money off next.
Who do we need to squeeze this time?
Exactly. See, it's a dog-eat-dog world out there, and you're just going to be better than the other people you're working with.
All right, let's talk a little bit about some of the stuff you've done online and the social things. What do you want to start with? I guess one of the biggest things when someone says, oh, what's something awesome that Brownie did, is that I saw you interviewing Kevin Rudd and it ended up being on the front page of the top story of news.com.au.
The Kevin Rudd incident was something in itself that was really just one of those spur-of-the-moment type things. It was around the time of the election before him and Tony Abbott fought it out, and he came through central Queensland, specifically in Gladstone, to do his big tour and say what he's going to do, what he wants to achieve, blah, 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 things like that. before he actually came through Central Queensland, we've been trying to get him on the show for ages. This is on Facebook, you know, leaving comments on Twitter saying, hey, we want you to join us on the show, trying to get his attention. And one thing leads to another. The day he arrives, we get a phone call from his PR team and they're like, hey, you know, can you fit Kevin Rudd into the show? So technically he crashed our show that day. We had to cancel everything else we had planned just to get him on the show.
Yeah, sweet. So he came in.
We
or...
asked him a lot about marriage equality because that was one of the things that he wanted to introduce if he was re-elected.
Yep.
But he kind of sounded very scripted. It was the same kind of stuff he'd said in different interviews over and over again. So wanted a little bit more. So went down to his actual press conference. And if you've ever seen these on TV, you see these reporters, these journalists who are all suited up. You know, they're looking really nice, really schmick, and very professional. And then you've got this tattooed, bearded guy who rocks up wearing shorts, a singlet, and a pair of shoes with no socks on because I had to wear shoes at this industrial site we're at.
Yeah, yeah.
Didn't have any socks in the car, so I just chucked them on. And, look, I asked him just one of the questions which came to mind, a bit of a light heart look at the marriage equality thing. We asked him if he could marry... We asked him, you know, if he was in a same-sex relationship, could he marry someone like Tony Abbott?
And I don't even know how he responded, but like in what he said, but I just know the look on his face ended up being plastered over the internet for about 24 hours.
Yeah, it was pretty big. He didn't really know what to say. He kind of looked at the Gladstone representative who was there with the same political party, gave him like a big hug and then just sort of like skirted his way around the question and went back to his normal scripted view on marriage equality.
Yeah, I thought that was so funny and it was so cool that you would have like had that on your show the next morning and stuff like that. When you like something like that happens, is that you going, oh, here's a great opportunity for something to take off and go crazy online? Or is it just simply, you know, if you share your opinion and spin enough shit, you know, if you do it often enough, sometimes things just pick up?
With that thing there, I had no intention for it to go as big as it did. It was just simply, look, everyone's going to be asking political questions and, you know, what he wants to do moving forward and for the economy, blah, blah, blah. I just wanted to go down there and ask a question which would really kind of, you know, throw him off. I thought he'd be a little bit more funnier about it. And obviously the reaction it caused, where it went viral, it went on news websites all across the internet, all over the TV as well too. It was just really, really something big out of something so small and insignificant. But a lot of the reactions from people afterwards were saying, you know, how could you say that? How could you ask that question to the Prime Minister of the country? But for me, it was just like something I'd ask, you know, one of my best mates.
Yeah.
And that's how I consider it. I don't think of people in power above me or anything like that. I like to think everyone is equal. And Kevin Rudd is a good bloke, so I thought he could take a joke.
Yeah, I think... I'd like to think that I was, when you say treating everyone equal, I would like to think that if I interviewed Tony Abbott or like some homeless guy, you would just treat them the same. I think everyone aspires to that, but I think it's harder to do than...
But here's the thing with Tony Abbott, it's no secret. I'm not the biggest fan of Mr. Abbott. So I think that when the time finally came, I've got something in mind of what I want to do. It's just a matter of trying to get past these security guards and, you know, actually see it happen.
I feel like I should ask you what this is, but then I feel like if this, because podcasts live online forever, I feel like this could be quite damaging.
Let's just say it's going to be very revealing. That's all I can say about that, because I want this to happen, and I know that if word gets out there about it, he will deny every single media request I have, like a few other musicians who I've tried to interview in the past.
And when you say quite revealing, would it be more or less revealing than that time that I broke into your hotel room?
It would be less revealing than that, I'm pretty sure of it.
Thank God. Well, you couldn't, it's not possible to be more, so that's fair enough. All right, let's talk about Hot for Franco.
All right, this was a campaign that we created with the show to try and get actor James Franco on the show. So for those who don't know, James Franco from such amazing movies as Pineapple Express, Spider-Man, he's very open and talks a lot with his fans on social media. The guy,
he's a bit weird and creepy, really, though, isn't he?
He is, yeah. If you haven't seen his Instagram account, he chucks up more questionable selfies than I have in my whole entire life.
Yep, yep.
So we thought, you know, if he's a guy that talks to his fans like that, then it'd be piss easier to get him on the show. So we set out to try and get him on the show. It all started with the Hot for Franco campaign hashtag. So
a lot of people from Central.
Like, we did some ridiculous stunts, including getting myself a James Franco tattoo.
yeah.
You know, we dressed up like his favorite character from his movie. We even recreated a scene from the movie 127 Hours. But every time we did something, it would always involve that Hot for Franco hashtag.
Yeah.
And the good thing about that is, obviously, you know, our listeners got behind us and involved. His fans got behind us and involved. And eventually, he actually spotted it when we had some success with a lot of the stuff that we were putting online.
Yes, yeah, sweet. And so do you reckon it got to him, or did it get to his people, or did it get close to him? Like, how far did you actually get?
Well, one of our listeners created this Hot FM for Franco fan page, which he actually liked. So obviously he knew what was going on, and he was liking a few of the posts that they were reposting of our stuff that we'd done.
Was this what? Was this Twitter or Instagram? Or?
That's on Instagram, yes.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
From there, we were talking with these people, and they were really, really, really helpful and really trying to get him on the show. We got down to the last minute, and it was pretty much almost good to go, but however, scheduling conflicts came in the way. And as you can imagine, this guy's an A-list Hollywood actor, so he's got movies lined up here, there, and everywhere. He's also a teacher. He's a motivator, too. He's an artist. So it's very, very hard to track him down and actually get a piece of his mind. So,
is it like a big letdown, or is it more like one of those, the journey to try and get him is just as much fun as
exactly.
If you actually got him in the end?
That's it. Like, we didn't get him on the show, yes. We got another guy called James Franco from the White Pages, but that's a story for a different day.
Was that my mate? I had a guy called Franco James.
No, it was not him. It was
so remember you sending an email saying...
The White Pages who answered their phone.
So remember you sending me a message.
Too happy about the call, but we weren't the first people to actually call him.
Well, I'm guessing he's heard that joke before.
Yeah, exactly. But look, in the end of it all, I went for a trip to the States last year. I say it's a working holiday. It was a holiday, but
yeah.
I had the full intention to go to New York where he was performing on Broadway.
Yep.
He was doing Of Mice and Men over there. And look, at the end of the show, a lot of the actors come out and pose for photos. They sign autographs, this, that, and the other.
Mm-hmm.
But the one thing that comes to mind from that is when he was doing the autographs and all these screaming fans trying to get his attention, all I did, I was about four people deep in the crowd, I just called out Hot for Franco, and he immediately stopped doing what he was doing. He looked up straight in the eyes, gave me a big smile, and went back down to doing autographs and worked his way around to where I was. That's where he had a bit of a chat with him. I said, look, we're still keen to get you on if you're keen. He's like, yep, definitely. He signed a photo. He posed for a photo with me, a selfie, and yeah, it was awesome.
That's awesome. So James Franco looked you in the eye and smiled. You've practically had sex with James Franco.
Exactly, and the baby's going to be born any minute now, I swear.
And it'll be a weird, weird-looking baby.
It's going to be beautiful. If it doesn't come out with tattoos, I know he's been cheating on me.
Right. All right. Brownie, we can't really talk about the Triple M thing yet, can we?
Not just yet, no.
All right. Last question, I guess. How much different will your job and life be without social media and the internet as a whole?
Look, I can safely say that social media has made working in the media industry so much easier. Whether it be, you know, talking to your listeners who are out in the streets and they spot things, whether it be, you know, traffic reports, things like that. I mean, Hamish and Andy came up to Rockhampton and we had all of our fans telling us, you know, where they were, where they spotted them and, you know, this, that and the other. So it gets that information through to you to quicker for you to broadcast and get out there as opposed to waiting for press releases and bulletins and things like that to come out. But it's also given people, you know, the opportunity to get in touch with, you know, bigger people, whether it be musicians, whether it be politicians, you know, actors, along the lines of that. It's really given us another platform to speak directly to the people who we want.
Now, I know your passion is like music and interviewing big bands and artists and stuff like that. Is it sort of getting to the stage where you can be Brownie, the guy that interviews bands and artists, but you don't actually have to have your own show to still be able to do that job?
Yeah, look, there's a lot of people, for example, I've got to give a shout-out to Higo, who
yep.
I have to say is quite frankly one of the biggest people, the biggest names in the music industry in regards to interviewing and his knowledge. And the thing is, he's just doing podcasts at the moment right now, and
yep.
honestly, he has one of the biggest followings in the world, and he doesn't have his own show. So I look at people like him as inspiration. I look at people, for example, Molly Meldrum. I'd love to have... you know, the reputation that he has, where he's one of the most respected people in the industry, knows all the bands, has the bands, you know, see him, come down, track him down and say
yep.
good day, things like that. I'd love to have that sort of respect and that sort of music knowledge in the back of my mind, whether it be focusing on the rock bands, the heavy metal bands, the hardcore bands that I listen to, or whether it's just some of the other acts that I'm just really, really keen to want to get down and interview.
Yeah, cool. Well, I look forward to seeing how it all pans out for you this year, Brownie. You know I'm real pumped for you making the move, and we can't talk too much about it now, but I'm sure... A, by the time this podcast airs, and B, just later on in the year, we'll see how it all works, and it'll be looking great, and I'm really excited for you 2015, mate.
Mate, definitely. Thank you for everything. Thanks for the opportunity. Stay tuned, and next time I'm in a hotel room, just give me a bit of warning next time, and I'll put some clothes on.
Absolutely not. See you later.
All right, see you, mate.